When Stephen Harper gave a speech to what was essentially a secret society of wealthy, hard-right Republicans, it was odd for a few reasons. After all, the members of the CNP are in the business of scrutinizing potential Republican leadership candidates. For example, after listening to Senator John McCain of Arizona speak, they decided he wasn't conservative enough. The group also vowed to run a third-party candidate if the Republican Party chose Rudy Giuliani as its leader because of his pro-choice position on abortion. Stephen Harper wasn't even a politician anymore, and he also happened to be a Canadian. So, what was behind the invitation? Whatever the reason, there was no mystery about why he jumped at a chance to speak to them. The CNP had enormous influence on the U.S. government. In 2003, Alberta's Economic Development Minister, Mark Norris, attended a three-day session of the CNP in a Virginia suburb close to Washington. Norris went to promote the tar sands, but also, as the Calgary Herald reported at the time, to mend fences, because Canada had not participated in the Iraq War. Donald Rumsfeld was the keynote speaker at the event. Beyond the appeal of the CNP's great power, the council also shared Stephen Harper's values. For one thing, Harper disliked the governance model in Canada, preferring Congress over Parliament. As he would later tell the Globe and Mail, the difference between the caliber and experience of the Bush cabinet and any Canadian equivalent was embarrassing to Canada. President Bush got to recruit top people from private industry into his inner political circle, while Canadian prime ministers were stuck with a cabinet stocked from the relatively feeble pool of elected MPs. Like Harper, the CNP was highly secretive. Its membership and donor list are private. Its events are closed to the public. It has been alleged that members are told not to use the name of the organization in emails to protect against leaks. For Harper, one of the most attractive aspects of speaking to the council was that the event would remain secret. CNP bylaws both blocked the media from attending and prevented the release of a transcript of what had been said, unless all speakers agreed. Thinking that he could say whatever he wanted without media coverage, Harper gave quite a speech that June night in 1997. His American audience must have felt as though they were in Utah, listening to a well-scrubbed Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate. The speech was a perfect blend of neocon and theocon, which was predictable enough. But what was unexpected was how Harper derided his own country to a foreign audience, as a Northern European welfare state in the worst sense of the word. By comparison, Harper was effusive in his praise of the United States and its Republican politics. "Your country, and particularly your conservative movement, is a light and inspiration to people in this country and across the world." He then gave a shorthand civics lesson about governance in Canada, in which his disdain for parliamentary institutions was stunning. "Our executive is the Queen, who doesn't live here. Her representative is the Governor General, who is an appointed buddy of the Prime Minister. Of our two legislative houses, the Senate, our upper house, is also appointed, also by the Prime Minister, where he puts his buddies, fundraisers, and the like. So the Senate is not very important in our political system. And we have a Supreme Court, like yours, which, since we put a Charter of Rights in our Constitution in 1982, is becoming increasingly arbitrary and important. It is also appointed by the Prime Minister. Unlike your Supreme Court, we have no ratification process." Stephen Harper was essentially describing the Canadian system of government as a dictatorship run by the Prime Minister of Canada. "So, if you sort of remove three of the four elements, what you see is a system that's described as unpaid checks and political imbalances. The House of Commons, the bastion of the Prime Minister's power, the body that selects the Prime Minister, is an elected body." But Harper wanted his audience not to be fooled. Even though voters selected the members of the House of Commons, it was not like the U.S. House of Representatives. What was it like then? Harper asked his audience to think of the Commons in terms of the U.S. Electoral College. In the United States, the Electoral College chooses the president and then disappears. But the Commons continue sitting for the next 4 years, having the power to vote on every issue. To Stephen Harper, Canadian parliamentary democracy was the political version of the movie Groundhog Day. It was an extraordinary description. Harper reduced the work of Parliament to simply being a rubber stamp of the Prime Minister's legislative agenda. The important thing to know is that this is how it will be until the Prime Minister calls the next election. The same majority vote on every issue. So if you ask me, what's the vote going to be on gun control or on the budget? We know that already. In strikingly simple words, Stephen Harper again declared to his American audience his personal view of Canadian governance. Between elections, the House of Commons was the property of the Prime Minister. If you were a member of the opposition, your business was restricted to going through a token exercise of voting on outcomes that were inevitable. The government always winning, the opposition always losing. Missing from his analysis was the opposition's role in bringing out public information in question period and the work of all party committees in amending legislation and holding the government to account when it breaks its promises or misleads the people. If Harper's view of how Canada's parliamentary system works was inept, his view of the country's other political parties was grossly dismissive. He described the NDP as a socialist party, proof that the devil lives and interferes in the affairs of men. It was only partly an attempt at humor. He was hitting the perfect tone with his audience, just as he had done 10 years earlier at the Reform Party's founding convention. He articulated what they despised. The NDP, in effect, represented the opposite of what everyone in the room believed with regard to social value issues. Having dismissed the NDP with the perfect Finkelstein word, socialist, Harper added the other hot-button epithet of abuse, radical. The NDP was a branch of the Canadian Labour Congress, CLC, which was explicitly radical. His description of the Liberal Party was carefully designed to stir just as much revulsion in his audience, but in a different way. To Christian right American conservatives, Bill Clinton, the sexual libertine and great deceiver, was the devil incarnate. So, when Harper described Canadian liberals as a type of Clinton pragmatic Democrat, it was the end of the conversation. The liberals were a degenerate political party. Full stop. That left just two other parties to describe. Harper damned the progressive conservatives by calling them liberal Republicans, which meant to this audience that they weren't Republican at all. Only the reformers qualified as conservative Republicans. Preston Manning was populist in the same leader-driven way that Ross Perot had been. And then Harper's final sales pitch on behalf of reform. It's the closest thing we have to a neoconservative party.